powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, now you guys know that we do What Caught My Eye after every single Seahawks game. So we come in on Monday and we talk about the little moments in the game that caught our eye and how many of these can tell a bigger story about the game, either what happened or where the team can move forward. Well, Seahawks, obviously not in the wild card. I don't have to tell you guys that. But there were several teams that we all had our eyes on. So let's get to What Caught My Eye, wild card edition. Jake, get us started.
All right. Deebo Samuel is one of the most unreal players that I have ever watched in the NFL. He is a true Swiss Army knife. Like, he is one of the best pure football players in the NFL. When it comes to being a receiver and being a route runner and his ability to get open, his ability to, you know, have sure hands, I mean, there's no question. His yards after catch, his ability to run when the football is in his hands is so incredibly dynamic. And I know we've talked about it for years now, that how Deebo is basically a running back that's playing wide receiver. And the 49ers have tapped into that more and more this season, actually using him at the running back position, using him in different situations just so they can get the ball in his hands. And guess what? He's just as good of a running back as he is a receiver. And the guy's unbelievable. And it's really fun to watch the ways that they utilize his unique skill set and utilize and find ways to continue to make him a factor throughout the game. And, man, just watching Deebo Samuel play is just it's a really, really fun watch.
Yeah, he's absolutely phenomenal. Again, one of those guys where you're like, is there anything he can't do? I mean, whenever you look at his yard total, you have to always make sure to go yards from scrimmage and see everywhere that he was involved. And when I was looking at the matchup between these two teams and where the Cowboys had the advantage, whether or not they should have won or could have, and they absolutely could have, the only two places I didn't give the advantage was at wide receiver and tight end. Consider all the weapons that Dallas does have at wide receiver, and I still couldn't give them the nod ahead of San Francisco, if only because of the offensive weapon that they have. Just as an entire weapon, run game, receiving game with Deebo Samuel. He's absolutely phenomenal.
He is.
All right. I'm going to start with Tristan Wirfs, the right tackle for the Bucs. The Buccaneers have one of the best offensive lines in football this year. Dallas probably had the best. Obviously, they aren't advancing. So Tampa Bay with one of the better lines as they move forward into the playoffs. And yet, he could barely stay in the game for the Buccaneers. Hurt very early in that one. Ends up leaving with an ankle injury. Sounds like it could come down to the wire whether or not he actually plays in the divisional round. Now, that's just one offensive lineman on a really solid offensive line. And this is a Bucs team that has clearly proven that they can advance and continue to win despite losing star after star after star. But I do wonder, as they continue to lose these stars, whether they can hang with the Packers should they continue to advance. Because they'll end up playing the outcome, given that the 49ers advance. They'll end up playing the winner of Rams-Cardinals, in which case I'd still look at the Buccaneers and what Tom Brady can do and be hesitant to bet against him. But if you advance, if you go to the NFC Championship, or let's say you get to a Super Bowl, how costly does that Chris Godwin injury actually become? How costly does this Tristan Wirfs injury, should that be serious, actually become? How costly does it become to lose Antonio Brown or to move on from him? As justifiable as it might have been, like, there's still weapons that you don't have anymore. And that continued once again on Sunday.
Yeah, it certainly did. And look, Tristan Wirfs is a huge blow to this team. He's been absolutely phenomenal since day one that he became a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. And it's something that they are finding a way to have to overcome adversity. And I believe that when you're Tom Brady, it's easier to overcome adversity when you're dealing with a loss of Chris Godwin. And being able to distribute the football. Okay, all right, we're gonna focus our resources to make sure we get Mike Evans more involved. We're gonna get Rob Gronkowski involved. You still got weapons and the ability to distribute the football to your other players. And I believe that Tom Brady has. I have the utmost confidence that he'll find a way to lose one of your key pieces on the offensive line. Yeah, that's a significant piece that you can't really figure out a way to maneuver around. And that's going to be interesting to watch as you see them go up into their next matchup. Whoever that's going to be, either the Cardinals or the Rams this next week, it'll be very telling as to see what can happen here. So definitely not the type of injury that you want to hear about. Okay, I hate to bring this up, and I hate to be this guy, okay? But watching TJ Watt forever and always will be one of those draft misses that will always have me asking, what if? Now, I am not one of those people because I found the love of my life, and I'm very grateful for that and all that. But there are plenty of people that I know that sit there and go, did I let the special one get away?
Oh, the Great White Buffalo.
That one get? And that's what TJ Watt is. He is the Great White Buffalo. He 100% is that and should be that to Seahawks fans, because the fact that you took somebody in front of TJ Watt and did not take him when he was available is one of the greatest blunders and misses that I can think of. I mean, this guy is one of the best players in football. He is one of the greatest edge rushers in football and just continues to make play after play after play, the definition of a true playmaker. And I know he makes an insane amount of money, but he capitalizes on that. He is worth every penny with the sacks he generates, the tackles for loss he generates. And as you saw, you know, in one of the few highlights that were in that playoff game, he tips a pass from Patrick Mahomes and it leads to an interception. I mean, this guy can do it all on the edge. And gosh, it just has me always thinking and asking, what would this guy be like in a Seahawks uniform?
Yeah, important to note that TJ Watt selected at 30th. Seattle entered the day with the 26th overall pick, traded that away to the Falcons, kept trading down until they got into the second round when on day two they selected, need I remind you, Malik McDowell. That didn't work out for Seattle nor for McDowell. It was also a pick that they made one ahead of Buda Baker. Now, at the time, the context of who they had at safety makes sense. They also didn't select cornerback Kevin King when a lot of people wanted them to, given that he was a local guy. Very okay with them deciding not to do that. Bow down, though. Good. Go Dogs. But yeah, TJ Watt, one of those guys where you think being selected 30th, now, there are guys selected before him that make sense. Christian McCaffrey, number 8 overall, obviously out of Stanford. Miles Garrett. Like, these are all picks that completely make sense. And then you get to guys like, would you, if you were to do it over again, Tampa Bay, take O.J. Howard over T.J. Watt, 15 picks before T.J. Watt? Like, I don't know. I don't know if I would do that. Or would you, Chicago, take Mitch Trubisky 2nd overall before you could have had someone else? Yeah, I don't know. You might want to revisit that one. Mitchell Trubisky, by the way. I'm shocked that, you know how they have the Pro Bowler. Like, he was once a Pro Bowler, so he's highlighted yellow. I think they should do something for MVP, like maybe a highlighted.
He's no longer the reigning MVP.
But that's what I'm saying. But they should highlight it. He's no longer a Pro Bowler. But if you get it once, it should be lime green forever. You should have that little color code on Wikipedia. I don't see why not.
He has it on his football reference page.
Well, good. He absolutely should. It's very important that he does. But yeah, I'm right there with you, Jake. Those are one of those picks that I look at and I just think, oh man, what happens? Because another thing about TJ Watt is, you know, you look at a guy like Christian McCaffrey and think, would he have been as great as he was? He was a phenomenal running back. Would he have been as great as he was in another system? TJ Watt's one of those guys where I'm like, the Steelers aren't always a great team. Like, TJ Watt's one of those guys that I think would genuinely be good no matter what team he was on.
Yeah.
He is a menace.
100% agree with you. 100% agree with that. Yeah. Sometimes it is all about the scheme fit and the right setup and all of that. TJ Watt is not one of those players. He would have been very, very successful anywhere he went.
All right. Well, I have something to make you feel a little bit better. Maybe. My turn?
Okay, please.
All right. Let's get to what caught my eye. How about what was like blinding all of us? The glare at AT&T from one of the most beautiful, one of the biggest, most elaborate stadiums in all of football is Jerry Jones Palace. Here's the problem, though. He's built it with some serious design flaws. One of them being that there is a horrible sun glare right in the middle of the field during the game. The Dallas Cowboys, by the way, really subjected to that in this one. Now, if you're a Dallas fan, there's probably been multiple times that you've complained about that on the field. And, you know, sun glare can happen with any stadium that has any kind of outdoor light filtering in if you're not a dome. But there was some kind of sick, twisted pleasure that I took from this, Jake, knowing that that Jerry Jones' elaborate, you know, kind of like over the top excessiveness had a little bit of hubris to it.
Yeah, you know, look, not everybody's perfect. And, you know, your perfect little stadium, Jerry Jones, isn't perfect, right? I just, we're so petty. We are very petty right now,
Stacey.
What's
wrong with that? What's wrong with
trying to attack this palace that he built? It's unbelievable in nearly every way.
I have not met a single person in my life who likes Jerry Jones. Like, it's almost like you almost universally, not, it's like a made fun of, not in the way that people hate Dan Snyder. No one I know has any respect for Dan Snyder. There are some people that, like, they think Jerry Jones is funny or charming, or they kind of get it, but almost no one I know will defend him. Everyone takes a little bit of pleasure in knowing that he keeps hurting himself in ways.
Stacey doesn't like Jerry World because there's not an aesthetic to it.
That's what I feel.
Nothing matches.
Here's the thing. He did not. He should have reached out
Where's
to me.
Where's the drapery?
He should have reached out to me. I love a good. I love some drapes, you know? Love a good accent.
What's this,
rug.
AstroTurf? We need hardwood floor.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. But you know what's even better and crazier than their stadium? Is their practice facility, and I've been at that many times, and that to me is the most insane thing in the world. Watching that entire, looking at that entire setup, walking through that entire setup that they have,
the
from the practice field to their,
I mean,
oh my gosh, it's unbelievable what they built.
Like, I think the Seahawks locker rooms are very nice. Like, they're very nice, and I think probably look like the majority of NFL locker rooms, but. AT&T Stadium, their practice facility, the Dallas Cowboys locker rooms do not look like the majority of NFL locker rooms. They're ostentatious. That's the word I was looking for.
All right. I just hope everyone understands that we will most likely never, ever see that performance again that we witnessed Saturday night from the Buffalo Bills offense.
Yeah, you're being negative right now.
They put on an absolute show. No turnovers on downs, no punts, no turnovers at all. They scored a touchdown, not a field goal, a touchdown on every single possession, Stacey. That is absurd, absolutely absurd, against the number two defense coming into the weekend. I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
That was insane. I mean, Josh Allen, the performance that he had, his ability to, you know, extend plays with his legs and make big-time throws, throwing with confidence. I mean, it just was incredible to watch that offense. And when it's at its best, led by, you know, offensive coordinator Brian Daboll and Josh Allen, it's clearly one of the most dynamic and most fun in football. The one thing I'm going to be curious, though, Stacey, is can they keep that performance up? I'm not saying being perfect, but what I'm saying is being that high octane offense from a passing perspective to where no one in this league is going to stop them, that is how they're going to play all the way to the Super Bowl. Because as we saw last year, their luck ran out when they got to the AFC Conference Championship because, you know, they didn't have a running game, because they didn't have balance, and Josh Allen really struggled in that final game. Can they keep this up? Because if they can, holy smokes, they might be the favorite to win the Super Bowl.
Well, and let's talk about the remaining teams in the AFC picture, right? So imagine it against another defense. The Buffalo Bills took on the New England Patriots, who during the regular season, this is averaged through all 17 games, during the regular season allowed just 187 passing yards per game and just 17 points per game. That's amazing. That's not even like three full touchdowns that you're allowing. You're allowing like maybe two touchdowns a game. That's second best in the league behind, the Buffalo Bills. The three teams that are still remaining in this playoff picture, you've got the Tennessee Titans, Cincinnati Bengals, Kansas City Chiefs. They're all ducks in a row here in the bottom third of the league. 245, 248, 251 passing yards surrendered, all allowing over 20 points per game. The New England Patriots, outside of the Bills, were by far the best defense remaining in the AFC. Now they're looking at the rest of the AFC that remains in the postseason, all being in the bottom third in points and yards allowed.
Yeah, it's big factor as to reason why Buffalo can keep this up. And if they can, I think they've got the best defense out of the bunch that can allow them to overtake the AFC. So definitely something to keep an eye on for sure. And that absolutely caught my eye over the weekend.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Let's head to the news desk, Curtis, for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacy.
Headline number one, that Cowboys 49ers game, offensive coordinator Kellen Moore and head coach Mike McCarthy of the Cowboys said that the refs had time to get the ball spotted before the controversial ending to the game, which saw the Cowboys lose. What is the real headline?
You know what's so weird is I think the headline should actually be that Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy had time to call literally anything besides a quarterback draw with 14 seconds left and no timeouts. That's what you had time to do. Anything
Bold
else.
Bold strategy, Cotton.
Yeah, throw a couple Hail Marys. Throw, you know, toward the sideline. I mean, like Jake said, you know, you pick up the first down and then slide out and then quickly slide and hand the ball off to the line judge or hand it off to the ref. Like, just get the play done.
Yes. Don't waste time. You don't need 17 yards in that situation. It's going to be a Hail Mary attempt at the end of the game to begin with, right? The difference between 30 and 20 is not all that drastic. So you already are putting yourself in a better position, right, by getting those 10 yards. And this is poor situational awareness by Dak Prescott. Everyone in the league knows. And maybe they don't preach it as much as they do here in Seattle. But in my experience, when I was a player here in Seattle and being somebody that had the chance to, you know how Pete Carroll talks and teaches the fundamental aspects of a two-minute drill, it is no matter what the situation is, you are running that ball into the referee unless the time has been stopped. And for Dak Prescott to try and hand the ball to the center, that was the biggest mistake that they could have made. And so the Cowboys can scream from the rooftops all they want that it was the referee's fault. Guess what, Stacey? The Cowboys have no one else to blame but themselves as they sit here today.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, the Cincinnati Bengals advanced in the playoffs for the first time since, get this, Jake, before you and I were born.
Holy smokes. Definitely not before Stacy.
Definitely not before Stacy was born.
I think the real headline is that the Bengals advanced in the playoffs for the first time in a very normal, some would say not very long, number of years.
It's been 31 years since they've last won a playoff game. And Jake and I are not that old.
We are not. No, we're definitely not.
Stacy, what was it like last time Cincinnati won a playoff game? It was a far different world.
I mean, I was a tiny infant, Curtis, so I really couldn't tell you.
Barely
remember it.
Sure about that?
It's like another world. Didn't you see that they...
Really?
You said that they were showing clips of that broadcast. And you said O.J. Simpson was doing sideline work?
Yeah, that's how long ago it was. O.J. Simpson was on the broadcast. He's had a far different go of it over the last 30 years or so. I can't imagine he's going to be on any sort of football broadcast in the near future.
No, I don't think so.
But yeah, it's been quite some time since the Bengals actually pulled off a victory in the playoffs. But you were there for it, so
okay,
I'm sure this is old news for you.
You know what? Good for them. I'm very curious to see how much they can continue to advance. One story we have coming up in NFL headlines about what Zach Taylor did with one of the game balls. One of them went to the team owner. Another one, he did something pretty cool with it. I'll get to that in NFL headlines. But congratulations to the Bengals. Maybe the easiest team to root for in the current playoff picture.
For sure.
Easily.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, in a rare Monday night playoff game, we're going to see tonight the Cardinals, led by Cliff Kingsbury and Matthew Stafford's Rams. What's the real headline?
The rare meeting of a stoppable force and a movable object. This one is a toss-up. John Clayton said it himself. He's really not sure what's going to happen in this one. Both teams can be absolutely stellar, absolutely amazing when they're at their very best, and both also have some critical flaws. Which version of each team are we going to see tonight?
Man, it is one of those things that I have no idea what we're in for, because both of these teams have looked amazing at different points in time. Amazing. And then they've also stumbled into the final, month or two to get themselves here into the playoffs. And this is these two teams are not coming in with any sort of real momentum, right? And that is the unique part of it. Two wildly talented teams, but have really struggled to finish out the year. And so this, to me, ultimately is going to come down to Matthew Stafford, though. I believe the Cardinals are the better team. Or, sorry, the Rams are the better team. And if Matthew Stafford can play good, clean football and not have any turnovers, I believe that's the key to the game. On the flip side, as I say that, Kyler Murray is one of the most dynamic playmakers in the game and has the ability to take over games when he's at his best. So this should be a really fun matchup. This should be a really, really good game to finish out the wild card weekend. And you know what, Stacey? Yeah, it makes me not all that mad that they added an extra game here to the playoff schedule, because gives us one more game to evaluate, talk about, and a very entertaining one to watch this Monday.
That's right. Speaking of that game, we're going to take a look around the rest of the NFL coming up in a couple minutes. It's going to start with those comments from Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy. I'll also tell you what Bengals head coach Zach Taylor did with that game ball. Pretty cool story here. Also, don't forget, you guys, it is a Monday, which means we're opening up phone lines at 1 p.m. We're going to get back to that question that Jake and I were discussing. How close are the Seahawks to being a Super Bowl team? And importantly, what do they need to become one? I'm not talking getting the playoffs. I'm not talking like everyone gets healthy. What do they need to be a Super Bowl team? All of that's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Let's take a look around the rest of the NFL for NFL headlines. This hour, by the way, brought to you by the Pro Club. And we'll start in Cincinnati, where head coach Zach Taylor gave one game ball from Cincinnati's first playoff win since 1991 to the owner. Congratulations. That's really awesome. The other one, though, he delivered to a random sports bar. He was driving home. He saw the sports bar in Cincinnati, pulls over, goes into the bar. It's all on video. You can find it anywhere on Twitter. It's up at ESPN. It's all over the place. And Zach Taylor himself goes into this bar where a bunch of Bengals fans who have been freaking out, they're partying, they're celebrating, they were watching this game. He gives them the game ball. This is absolutely phenomenal, Curtis. Like, what a way to celebrate. I don't know how far the Bengals will get, and I have my doubts that they'll get that much further. They have something to be really excited about in what they have with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase. Yeah, they're still a couple of pieces away from being a team that you can always bet on, but how fun is this atmosphere? I can only imagine.
Oh, man. Being a Bengals fan right now, I wouldn't know what it's like, but Justin Barnes of the Mike Salk Show, he's a Bengals fan, and that's
Justin,
all he was talking about this morning.
Justin today
how
reminding people, just like, hey, Stacey, I don't know if I told you this, but the Bengals won a playoff game, so just so you know. Jake, how would you feel if, I mean, it's a bit different here in Seattle. They've had success for a decade, but Zach Taylor walks into this sports bar, delivers the game ball to all these fans. Imagine being one of those fans in that moment.
It is incredible. I mean, these are the types of moments that are so fun, right? I mean, you experience so much, so much struggle, so much suffering for 31 years to be a Bengals fan is torture. And guess what? We have the understanding of that in terms of being Mariners fans, unfortunately, and the playoff drought that has incurred here. We're not even talking about playoff wins. We're talking about making it to the playoffs. So to imagine that and then imagine, you know, the Mariners make the playoffs, imagine Scott Servais and you know, going to some local bar and buying everyone's tab or buying a round of drinks or whatever. I mean, just the excitement and the emotion behind all of it is second to none, and that's why, you know, winning and having sustained a winning organization is amazing to have and to be a part of. Don't get me wrong, but to experience those moments are just as special when they do eventually happen.
All right, next story here, coming out of Tampa Bay. We mentioned in what caught our eye about Buccaneers right tackle Tristan Wirfs going down with an ankle injury. He tried to stay in the game, just clearly was not himself, eventually had to leave. As far as the status for this upcoming game, which will be against the winner of Rams-Cardinals tonight, Bruce Arians says it'll probably come down to the wire.
Yeah, it is going to come down to the wire. I would agree with that. I mean, with that statement, I mean, I think that it's 100% accurate, and that's why, you know, when it comes to these types of matchups, I am more than excited to, you know, watch the playoffs. And, you know, look, we talked about, Stacey, we talked about the Bills. We talked about, you know, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, these teams that we ultimately think are, you know, best suited to be able to make it to the Super Bowl. Well, the divisional round, I think, has a lot more room for upsets than I think the wild card round does. I mean, you may disagree with me on that. I think that that's why the divisional round is one that's super exciting. And, you know, you get more matchups that are even, like we're going to witness tonight.
All right. Next up here, Dallas Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy is defending his team. His team now out of the playoffs. Here's what happened. We've already gone over it, but Dak Prescott on a quarterback draw picks up 17 yards, runs down the middle, slides, doesn't give the ball to the line judge. The ball has to get spotted. It needs to be touched by the ref before they can resume the next play, and a time runs out, so they don't have any time. 49ers win and move on to face the Packers at Lambeau. Well, as far as what should have happened, McCarthy says that they should have had more time. This is the quote. "The execution between us and the official spotting the ball obviously wasn't in tune. We shouldn't have had any problem getting the ball spotted there." McCarthy, by the way, defended Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator for the Cowboys, for calling that play. He said that he was expecting them to get another last play opportunity, and that he, again, thought that everything they did there was fine. The problem clearly is with the coordination between the ref spotting the ball and not giving them enough time to get another playoff.
Ah, so not taking into account how long it would take for the back judge to be able to get to the line of scrimmage to be able to get that ball, and also Dak Prescott, you know, having to take the referee then having to take the ball out of the center's hands so that he could spot it. Yeah, all of that is the referee's fault. They didn't take into account any of their own problems with the setup, with the overall execution of that particular play. So, yeah, you can stand by it, and in theory, I totally get it. But the execution of that, going an extra 7 yards instead of just taking the first down, you know, Dak Prescott not handing the ball to the referee, those are two, you know, critical errors that I think they were overlooking when calling that play, or at least didn't make it clear enough to Dak Prescott in the moment so that those two things were forefront in mind.
Speaking of that game, let's talk about the winning team. The San Francisco 49ers going to travel to Lambeau Field to take on the number one seeded Packers. Now, they might have to do so, without Nick Bosa and Fred Warner. We don't know yet. Both guys have their status up in question. That game, by the way, going to be Saturday evening. Nick Bosa suffered a concussion in this one, and Fred Warner had to leave the game with a right ankle injury. So Kyle Shanahan says they should have a chance to play, but no one can say for certain just yet.
Well, you're hoping like crazy that they have the chance to play, or that they will play, because in my mind, without Nick Bosa, yeah, exactly. Without Nick Bosa and Fred Warner heading up your defense, yeah, you've got no chance in this one against Green Bay. Green Bay was just, they're too good. They're too good offensively. They're rolling right now. Defensively, they're playing at a really good rate. I just don't think that San Francisco, although they were able to beat Dallas, and oh, by the way, I think I picked that one. I think that was the one that I picked. I do not foresee the 49ers beating Green Bay.
I definitely did not say the Raiders might upset the Bengals. I just for sure want to make it
clear.
Well,
you were close. I mean, it was. I
was
still
close.
It went down to the wire, Stacey. Give yourself
so
some credit.
Close.
Jeez.
No. I did say that might be an upset, and I said it without any confidence whatsoever. And here I am, not claiming it at all. As far as Mike McCarthy, his future in Dallas seems pretty certain. Cowboys executive vice president Stephen Jones says he absolutely expects Mike McCarthy to remain head coach. Jake, my question for you, can the Cowboys get to a Super Bowl with Mike McCarthy as head coach?
Yes, they can. I mean, my goodness, they definitely can. I mean, think about where they were last year compared to this year. I mean, just a huge jump in turnaround, right? I mean, total overreaction here. It'd be so silly to see them move on from Mike McCarthy unless they liked the other two guys that are coordinating their team better than the current head coach. Unless they sat there and said, you know what? We actually really like Dan Quinn. We really like Kellen Moore, and we would rather not lose those guys to potential head coaching positions. That would be the only way I would ever see Mike McCarthy being edged out But right now, I mean, that would be ridiculous to fire him after this season, you know, with just only 2 years and last year being absolutely abysmal, this year being definitely different. Now, there's no question that there's things that need to be corrected, but, I mean, this was a great year for the Dallas Cowboys, and, you know, the only question is, can they build off of it?
All right, well, let me get to the schedule. I mentioned it earlier. Let me remind you guys, here is what's set for the divisional weekend, and the outcome of this game will determine who plays the Bucs, so that schedule at least is set. You've got, on Saturday afternoon, the Bengals traveling to Tennessee to take on the number one seeded Tennessee Titans. Then following that game for Saturday evening, you've got the one I think most people here in Seattle watching, the 49ers as a wild card. Right now, the only wild card winner from the weekend, heading to Lambeau to take on the Packers. On Sunday, you're going to open with the winner of whatever game from tonight, the Rams or Cardinals, going to take on the Buccaneers. And then that's your kind of early morning game. And then the early afternoon, you've got the Bills at Chiefs for the game that I'm going to say the rest of the NFL world in or outside of Seattle is most eager to see.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that is going to be must-watch TV, no question about it. That's going to be the game of the weekend. I mean, it clearly, out of the matchups. I mean, who are you more interested in? There's no one else that really competes with that. San Francisco, Green Bay, yeah, I mean, maybe that could be a good game, but no one's really truly interested in that. You've got two great quarterbacks. You've got two teams that have had phenomenal seasons in Buffalo and Kansas City. That is absolutely the game of the weekend, and some would argue that that might be the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is being played, the AFC Championship game is being played a week early between Buffalo and Kansas City. So, yeah, that's going to be a huge one. To determine the landscape of the way that this year is going to finish. And, you know, the one that will interest me the most, if the Rams win tonight mm-hmm. and they play Tampa Bay, mm-hmm. the Rams beat up on Tampa Bay mm-hmm. pretty good early on to start the year. So that's a matchup that I think I would be more curious about, that I'd be more interested to see. But at the same time, look, the Cardinals, they're a team that I'm not really threatened by for whatever reason, and I wouldn't mind seeing them, after experiencing a lot of down years, be able to beat up on the Rams and make themselves survive one more
week. Oh, teams easiest to root for in order. Bengals, Cardinals, Bills, in my mind.
Okay.
Franchises that have either never won a Super Bowl or franchises that are kind of going from the basement to the top. Especially in the case of the Bengals, the Cardinals obviously making the playoffs for the first time in a while. I mean, to me, that's the rooting order of who's yeah. easiest to root for would go in that order.
Well, it's funny because Tennessee doesn't fit that order for you, and it doesn't really for me either. And part of it is they're not dynamic, right? They're not a dynamic team, but they muddy it up and they find a way to get it done. Now, if Derrick Henry is able to return to action, then that makes them a little bit more exciting. But I would agree with you there. In terms of rootability, yeah. if that's even a word, I would totally agree with you there.
Mike Vrabel, the Dan Campbell of the postseason right now. So I guess you can root for the Titans.
That's right.
All right,
that's
in
right.
20 minutes, we are opening up phone lines. We're going to talk about how the Seahawks get back to a Super Bowl. After watching all of these teams over Wild Card Weekend, how far away do you think the Seahawks are from being a Super Bowl contender? I'm not talking about getting to the postseason. I'm talking about winning a Super Bowl, and what do they need to do to get it done? We'll talk about that at 1, opening up phone lines, and Jake and I will talk about it next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
How close or how far away are the Seahawks to being a Super Bowl team? I think one thing was clear, Jake, after watching Wild Card Weekend, is that there's the best and then there's the rest. The only Wild Card team to advance was the San Francisco 49ers because Dallas kept shooting itself in the foot, continued to be the most penalized team in the NFL, hurting themselves with false starts, blah, blah, blah. But really, it could have gone either way. I mean, the 49ers get that first down or hit one more pass. We're talking about another game, and obviously Dallas gets an extra play or two, and they continue to advance. Otherwise, assuming the Rams win tonight, it was all kind of to be expected. Not only that, but the teams that were the higher seeds dominated. You had the Chiefs 42-21 over the Steelers, the Bills 47-17, best game of the weekend, over the Patriots, and then the Buccaneers handled the Eagles 31-15 in a game that was much more comfortable for Tampa Bay than the score would imply. So my question, how close is Seattle to a Super Bowl? I don't just mean close to making the playoffs. I mean, how close is Seattle to hanging with teams like that?
Well, in my estimation, they have to really, really fix themselves when it comes to the trenches. And if they can do that, if they can get premier pass rush help from Chandler Jones, if they can get premier interior pass rush help from somebody like a Hakeem Hicks and really help their offensive line upgrade, I'm assuming that they're going to bring back Dwayne Brown at the left tackle spot. I would be very shocked if that didn't happen. The one clear spot that you can upgrade would be at the center position. The right tackle market, I don't think, is as clear-cut. But center, there's a few viable options. Ryan Jensen, Jason Kelsey would be my number one pick out of the two. You know, and there's some other guys that you could look into in terms of options there. But I think if you were able to really fix the offensive line and defensive line and really get added blue chip veteran talent there, I think that would significantly help this group and help push them forward. Because if they want to replicate any version of what they did over the last 2 weeks, that's what has to get done.
So what I was going to say earlier is we talked about adding an elite edge rusher. We talked about you know, getting your offensive line to be even better, because you look at the offensive line rankings. This is I guess subjective. It's like Pro Football Focus, so some people might feel differently. But you look at the offensive line rankings, a lot of the postseason teams have some of the better offensive lines, and you could say the same defensively. But I think that I still look at a couple areas where I don't know that just improving the offensive and defensive line is enough. Like, if you're only as strong as your weakest link, I think the Seahawks are still going to have a lot of questions at defensive back, where you might not have Quandre Diggs. You might not have DJ Reed. And if you don't have either of those two, I have no idea who your starting corners are going into the season. Like, I think that what you're seeing is something like the Chiefs. That might end up being their downfall, right? A guy like Daniel Sorensen, who, for all the talent you have in the world, if you don't have talent in some key places, and corner, I would say, is one of those, like, you're going to get exposed.
Well, what if I said you were able to retain Quandre Diggs and DJ Reed, and you brought back Sidney Jones?
Then so, I would feel differently.
So that's what I'm saying, is I am assuming, because that is what Pete Carroll and this group has said, that they are taking priority first and foremost to re-sign their own guys. So if you're taking priority to do that, to me that comes with the idea that you're going to bring back Quandre Diggs, knowing that Diggs wants to be back. DJ Reed is I think a tougher conversation, because he had a great year, and it's a very, very competitive market when it comes to the cornerback spot. But I think DJ Reed isn't a hyped up name, and I don't know if he's going to get the same kind of money and command the same type of money out in the open market like Shaquille Griffin was able to, right or wrong. I just feel that way. So that's overall what I'm assuming, Stacey, is that when I say those fixes, I'm talking about additions to this roster that they have already kind of made the proclamation that they are going to return those guys, do everything they can to return those guys, and add to what they had at the end of the year.
I would also say one other thing, which is I feel much more comfortable saying this team is a pretty legitimate contender if Rashad Penny and Chris Carson remain healthy. Without that run game, it just becomes, how often can Russell Wilson find Lockett and DK, who accounted for nearly half of all of Seattle's completions this year?
Yeah, it does turn into that, and that's a problem when that's not your overall offensive system, right? If you're Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and you have an offense that is driven by that side of it, well, then there's a different conversation to be had there, but that's not what this offense is going to be run, or the desire is from Shane Waldron and Pete Carroll and even Russell Wilson, understanding that, hey, a philosophy more like Green Bay, a philosophy more like what Tampa Bay has had with the balance. I know that Tom Brady has thrown for an insane amount of yards and has an insane amount of passing attempts. But overall, the whole point of the offense is to be rooted and to be balanced. And if you can have more of an offense like that, then you give yourself the best possible chance to be able to advance and to move forward. But you're right. If that gets cut out from underneath you because your running backs can't stay healthy, then you've got a serious problem. And we're looking at a major problem that they've been dealing with for quite some time now.
All right. Can they make up the talent deficit? If there is one, what do they do? How close are the Seahawks to being a Super Bowl team? What do they need to be a Super Bowl team? I don't want to hear you call in and say, I think if everyone's healthy, they can get to the playoffs. If you don't think with everyone healthy that they can win a Super Bowl, then we want to hear what do they need. And if you think with everyone healthy that they can win a Super Bowl, then tell us why. Then tell us that. So here is the number to call, 206-421-3776. We're talking about how Seattle gets back to a Super Bowl, a Super Bowl. You're competing with teams that are as talented as the Bills. Obviously, you wouldn't be doing that in the playoffs until you got to the Super Bowl. But you're competing with teams like the Packers. You can hang with those teams. You're betting on Seattle in those situations. How do they get there? 206-421-3776. What are those missing pieces for the Seahawks? It's coming up next.